What is going on, sports fans? Yes, we are back with another episode of Glass Half Full. I had a couple of things happen in the last couple of days to where couldn't get a show done, but we are back and ready to go, and got a lot to talk about. Real quick, just kind of recap a couple of the things that we didn't get a chance to talk about on Tuesday or Wednesday. Obviously, congratulations to the Tennessee Volunteers beating Texas A&M in the College World Series to take home that national championship, and the Florida Panthers taking home their first Stanley Cup with a 2-1 win over Edmonton Monday night in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. The Panthers really, I mean, we talked about it on Monday's show when we previewed that game. They really kind of had to limit Edmonton in that fast start, and they did a great job of that. It was 1-1 heading into the second period, and they were able to just kind of continue to limit those attacks. And one thing I noticed that Florida was doing really well in Game 7 that they may not necessarily had been doing well in games 4 through 6, and that was blocking shots in front of the goal, right? I saw a lot of shots that got deflected that never really made it to the goal. Really did a great job defensively of helping out Bobrovsky and making sure that he had that extra help there around the net to help clear stuff out and not give Edmonton those second chance looks like they had gotten the previous three games that had really helped them get that opportunity to tie that series back up and force that Game 7. So big win for them, and I know they are going to be celebrating in a big way. I've already seen lots of pictures and videos. Apparently a couple of the players took the Stanley Cup to the beach there in Miami and actually got in the water with it, yeah, and then seen it taken to dinner with a couple of players. I saw somebody was, I don't know which one it was. You just lose track of all the players and all the shenanigans they do with the cup once they win it, but somebody was eating pasta out of it. So definitely enjoying their first Stanley Cup there in South Beach, as they should. They definitely deserve that. So again, congratulations to the Florida Panthers there. And Edmonton, if you're Edmonton, I don't think you have anything to hang your head about whatsoever, because this is a team that at one point was one of the worst teams in the NHL, and then they turned it around. Was it had like a 16-17 game winning streak, something like that, and ultimately got things going in the right direction and found themselves in the Stanley Cup Finals with a chance to win in a Game 7. So you can't be mad about the season. It's upsetting because you lost the championship. That's never fun. That's never easy. You know, I put that feeling right up there with a breakup. You know, it's never a fun or easy feeling to have. But, you know, Edmonton definitely is a team that is going to be back in this position next year. And I'm definitely looking forward to the next hockey season when it gets started later on this year in October. Definitely lots of potentially good teams. And, of course, Florida going to be right back in that mix, and it's nice to see a team that literally used to be the laughingstock of the NHL, was a team that nobody really wanted to go to, now lifting the cup for the first time, and it doesn't look like they're going to go anywhere. They're still going to have an opportunity to win the Stanley Cup next year as well and repeat as champions. So we'll see what happens. But I'll tell you what, though. State of Florida, They may play some good football. They may play some good baseball. Hockey, though. Hockey is hot right now in the state of Florida, right? Tampa Bay Lightning winning it in 2020, 2021. Now in 2024, you've got the Florida Panthers taking it home. You've got some of the minor league professional hockey teams doing really well all throughout the state. Florida's quite the hockey state. Don't sleep on the game of hockey in the state of Florida. Just because it's the Sunshine State and it's not a state that's known for ice and cold weather, hey, they play a cold weather sport pretty darn good, if you ask me. Let's see. Let's move on now to NBA draft. We had round one last night. Not a lot of big shakeups, not a lot of big surprises. Obviously, there might be some people that are surprised that Bronny James wasn't taken in the first round. I personally am not. I'm not necessarily surprised by that. Not because of his play on the court or anything like that, because I think he does have the talent. He does have the skill level to play at the NBA. But those health issues with his heart, that I think is going to scare away a lot of teams, and it's going to make it tougher for him to get drafted, right? I feel like maybe he should have come back for an extra year at USC, played another year there, kind of continued to get checked up and checked out, and had definitive proof that there really is nothing there to worry about anymore. and then tried to enter the NBA draft next year. But he wanted to do it this year, and that's his decision. And we'll see what happens with the second round coming up. But some of the, I don't want to call them winners, but some of the big notable things from last night, at least it stood out to me. The Minnesota Timberwolves trading up to number 8 for Rob Dillingham. Look, we talked about the Timberwolves when they were playing the Dallas Mavericks in the Western Conference Finals. Anthony Edwards couldn't do it all by himself. He needed to find a guy that could help him, that could help shoot the ball and help score some points, kind of provide a little bit of offensive relief when teams are double-teaming Anthony Edwards, because we saw that throughout the postseason. OKC did it to Minnesota. Minnesota still won the series and advanced to the Western Conference Finals, but we still saw OKC shut down, double-team Anthony Edwards, and really kind of stifle that that Minnesota Timberwolves offense. So it is one of those things to where this was an area of need that they needed to address. They needed to go find somebody for Anthony Edwards, and they moved up in the draft. They traded with, you know, at that number 8 pick right there to get Rob Dillingham. And Rob's a guy that is, he's seen as one of the best scorers in this draft class. So that's exactly what they need, an offensive guy, an offensive weapon that they can help and that they can use to provide a little relief there for Anthony Edwards when he's being double-teamed. And having a guy like that on the court with Anthony Edwards who can hit the shots, who can score points, it really takes away the opportunity to double-team Anthony Edwards. Because if you double-team Anthony, then you know what? Rob Dillingham's going to be able to hit shots, and he's going to be, so you have to kind of play straight up 5-on-5 defense if you're opposing teams there for the Minnesota Timberwolves. So I like it. The only knock with him is that he is not the strongest defensive player, but I think when you're on a team that has Rudy Gobert, you can make up for that a little bit, right? There's you can have a little slack in that line, if you will. So I don't think that's going to be something that's going to be too big of an issue for him with the Minnesota Timberwolves. How about the Thunder? Another team from the western side of the playoffs for the NBA this year. They took at number 12 Nikola Topic. And this is a guy, look, more young talent. We talked about OKC in the playoffs. They were a young team that, you know, surprisingly good for how young they actually were, right? Not a lot of NBA experience in that group, but they still showed up and proved that they were a very good team. And, I mean, they made it all the way down to the Western Conference semis, you know, and ultimately lost to the team we were just talking about, the Minnesota Timberwolves. So they are definitely a talented team. They're a team that's going to be good for years to come. They're moving in the right direction there. And adding a guy like this is just going to make them even better. I mean, you talk about a guy who's, you know, he's a European basketball player, right? So things like pick and rolls and things like that, and being able to read the court, that's what he does extremely well. So it's definitely going to be a great addition there for OKC. I will say he is not going to be able to play next year. He's dealing with an ACL injury. He's going to have some surgeries to get that taken care of and all of that. So definitely going to be a situation where OKC is kind of playing. I read an article that I think they put it exactly the way it needed to be put perfectly. OKC is playing the long game with Nikola Topic. So I think going out and getting a guy like this, who, yes, he's not going to play for you this year, but I think that they did a great job of going out and setting up a guy that, you know what, they can be able to help him get the top-tier medical treatment and get back as soon as possible. And once he does, he's going to be a great addition there to that OKC team and help them continue to be better. Speaking of OKC and Golden State are going after a player that could help them win now in Paul George. We talked about Paul George before. He's a guy that's heading into some free agent markets, and looks like maybe his run with the Clippers are done. Obviously, he was brought into the Clippers. He was with the Clippers, and then they bring in, you know, Kawhi Leonard. That kind of soured the waters a little bit there. Paul George hasn't necessarily performed as well as he thought he would, or as well as the Clippers thought he would in his time there with the Clippers. So Golden State and OKC both making a step up in going after the potential free agent. Again, really, he's not officially a free agent just yet. Free agency doesn't start until, what is it, today's the 27th, Sunday on the 30th is when free agency will start. And then we'll find out where Paul George, his plan is, whether it is to re-sign with the Clippers or to enter free agency. Same with LeBron. Same with a lot of other players inside the NBA, like D'Angelo Russell. So we'll find out what their path is on Sunday and what they decide to do. But if he does decide to go free agency, Golden State and OKC are joining that list of Philadelphia, Orlando, and even the Clippers. The Clippers are, if you look at the odds, the Clippers are a team that is kind of right there in that mix as well as far as possibly re-signing him. I think a lot of people, though, expect him to kind of head out. I think that a lot of people are thinking that he could end up in Orlando or Philadelphia or even Golden State and OKC. And I mean, if I'm Paul George and Golden State is giving me the opportunity to play with Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, how do you not take that, right? If you want to win, and I know Paul George has come out and he said it's not about chasing a championship. So that may eliminate a team like Golden State, and it may even eliminate a team like OKC, considering the deep playoff run they just had. But at the same time, you almost have to wonder with Paul George. Yes, he says it's not about winning a championship, but isn't it about winning a championship? Like, don't you want to win a championship? Like, are you okay with not making the playoffs or getting eliminated in the playoffs? No, you want to win a championship. If you're a competitive athlete and you have that fire burning inside you, you want to win a championship. So either Paul George is lying when he says it's not about chasing a championship or winning a championship, or maybe that fire is just gone and he just wants to go to a place where he can play out the last few seasons of his career and then call it a day. I have a hard time believing it's that last one. I think that he's just kind of making it out to be that it's not necessarily as important to him as finding the right place that's the right fit for him, and that he would be willing to take a step down as far as the caliber of team he's playing on to go and play in a place that is the right fit for him. So I will just have to see what Paul George picks, right? We'll just have to see what he decides. But if he does, if Golden State does make that offer, I mean, how do you pass that up? Very tough to pass that up. Very, very tough to pass that up in my mind. I don't see how you do it. Major League Baseball, Shohei Ohtani's in some headlines. First and foremost, Shohei Ohtani, considering he's contemplating being a part of the Home Run Derby. I have zero influence on Mr. Ohtani's decision, but I say he should do it. I think he really should do it. I think it's a great opportunity. Who wouldn't want to see Shohei Ohtani compete in the Home Run Derby? He's one of the most polarizing players in Major League Baseball and really in all of sports right now, especially with the whole betting thing that happened, was going on with the beginning of the season. Good headlines, bad headlines. You know, what is it they say? No press is bad press is still good press, right? At least your name's still getting out there and getting circulated around. So I think Shohei Ohtani definitely could compete in the Home Run Derby. I think Shohei Ohtani, the way he hits the ball, I think he'd have an opportunity of winning the Home Run Derby. So I definitely would be all for seeing that. Looks like we've got another story involving Shohei Ohtani. The Dodgers bad boy, he made a pretty good catch in the dugout. There's a foul ball comes screaming into the dugout, and he makes a barehanded snag on it with both hands. And the reason why this is a story is because none other than Shohei Ohtani was standing right behind him, and had he not made that catch, that ball probably would have hit Shohei Ohtani and would not have been good for the Dodgers. So I am putting it out there right now that this bad boy, you know, whenever we had the bees at the, was that the Angels and the Astros playing that game? Or it might have been different teams. I'm not sure. I think it was Angels and Astros. So, but when he had the bees on the netting and we had to postpone and delay the start of the game so they could clear them out, you know, Topps made a card for the guy that cleared out the bees. I think Topps should make a card for this bat boy. I think, honestly and truthfully, I don't know how it works with bat boys. I don't know if they get paid by Major League Baseball. I don't know if they get paid by the organization that they are bat boying for or bat personing for, if you will, now that there are some young ladies that do it as well. But either way, whoever pays this particular person needs to give them a raise, needs to definitely step up and kind of give them a little compensation for this. Because, again, we're talking about arguably one of the biggest names in Major League Baseball that could have been seriously hurt by a foul ball in the dugout had this person not made the catch they did. I mean, it's a fantastic video. If you haven't seen it, go look it up. It is an incredible catch. So definitely in favor of all kinds of raises and whatever. Give him a Dodger dog. Give him a couple of Dodger dogs on the house. You know, he protected Shohei Ohtani. That's definitely worth something. Peacock on NBC and the Olympics coming up. They are actually going to be allowing you to have personalized Olympic recaps. Now, this is one of my favorite things to kind of do with the Olympics is to watch the recaps. And you get to see all the different events that are going on, and they recap, you know, what happened throughout that day, especially with the time difference, you know, to where it's like you've got some events happening. It's like here it's like 2 a.m., but there it's like 5 in the afternoon. So, you know, it's you want to go back and watch the recaps, but sometimes you don't really care to see all of them. Like with the Winter Olympics, that weird thing they do with like the speed walking where they're on skis and they're going through the snow. I don't really care to see that. I don't really care to see who placed first in Heat A of Trial B. I don't really need to see that. So that definitely would not be on the list. So the fact that you can personalize this and say, hey, I only want updates for Team USA basketball, for swimming, for, you know, polo, whatever you want to see, gymnastics, whatever you want to see with the Olympics. I think it's great that they can do this. The one thing that's weird to me is that they're going to use an AI version of Al Michaels' voice. We'll see how it goes. I'm sure it probably will sound like Al Michaels because, you know, it's AI, so it'll sound like him. But it's just weird to me the things that we use AI for now. AI has just become it's become a little too Skynet for me. All right. Like, I might have watched Terminator too many times growing up, and that's something that I will just have to deal with my non-trusting of AI. But I don't know. It just, AI weirds me out. But I'm definitely looking forward to seeing how this plays out with Peacock and keeping you up to date on just what you care about for the Olympics. So you don't have to watch about curling curling's not a summer Olympic sport, is it? Because it's on ice. So, yeah, that's more of a Winter Olympic sport. What's a summer sport outside of, like, gymnastics and swimming and basketball, which really kind of seem to be the only one we care about here in the U.S.? Skeet shooting? Is skeet shooting one? I don't know. I'd have to have the list in front of me. Either way, if you want a personalized update on it, you're definitely going to be able to get that through Peacock and their Olympics coverage. Some college football news. We are less than a month away from college football, NCAA football 25 coming out. I'm definitely excited for that. And, you know, one thing that is always interesting to me is how the environments are going to play out on these games and how much of an effect they're going to have. And that's really kind of sparked the conversation and the debate of who has the best atmosphere in college football, who has the best stadium. And Bruce Feldman's actually come out with a list of some of the stadiums he feels like are the best in college athletics. He starts his list off here, number one with LSU in Tiger Stadium. Yeah, I mean, you got over 100,000 fans there. Now, I will say if you're at Tiger Stadium for a noon kickoff, and this is your first time at Tiger Stadium, you're probably going to look around and go, I don't understand the hype. I don't understand the hype. Trust me. Come back at a game that starts at 7 o'clock in the afternoon or 7 o'clock at night. You'll get the hype. There is a significant difference in playing in LSU at noon compared to playing at 2:30 or 6 o'clock in the afternoon for sure. Number two on his list, Alabama Bryant-Denny Stadium. Yeah, Bryant-Denny Stadium is one of those stadiums that's over 100,000, lots of passionate fans there, and especially, you know, the last few seasons with the way that they've played, you've got all the great traditions there, you know, take the money and run, all the great things that have happened throughout the years at Bryant-Denny Stadium. That's just a historic stadium. It's definitely a loud environment, but I think it kind of also falls in the same suit as LSU. If you go to a noon kickoff, depending on who they play, right? Like if the Iron Bowl started at noon, oh no, that place is going to be rowdy and it's going to be ready to go. But if they're playing, you know, Louisiana Tech at noon, yeah, probably not that much excitement for a game against the Bulldogs at noon. I'm just saying. Number three, Beaver Stadium for Penn State. Yeah, that's definitely a good one, especially when they do the whiteout game. That is one of the best traditions and one of the best environments in all of college sports. Ohio Stadium for the Buckeyes and Ohio State. Look, when you get out there and you're spelling out O-H-I-O on the field and you got the tuba player sprints over to dot the I, and then the team gets out there and they start playing and it's, you know, they're playing good quality football. There's Ohio Stadium is definitely up there on the list. So far, honestly, so far, I don't have any kind of complaint with his top five so far. And, you know, just a recap real quick. Tiger Stadium at one for LSU, Bryant-Denny at two, Beaver Stadium at three for Penn State, and Ohio Stadium for Ohio State at four. Number five, this is kind of where my first issue comes. He's got Lane Stadium for Virginia Tech. Look, I'm not saying that Lane Stadium does not get loud. I'm not saying that Lane Stadium does not get rowdy. But I think the whole thing with Lane Stadium is Enter Sandman. Right, I think that you know, the entrance, once you get past the entrance, I think it's kind of, you know, it's not a subpar experience, but I think there's other stadiums in the country that maybe have a little bit better of an experience, because especially with the way Virginia Tech has played the last few seasons, once that game gets started, usually not a good thing for them, right? So Lane Stadium, I get it, because of Virginia Tech, you know, the tradition, you know, all of the things with, you know, the Hokie Stone and playing Enter Sandman as you run onto the court, or excuse me, run onto the field. We've been talking about the NBA draft all day, so I'm still stuck on court. You know, it's kind of like Camp Randall and Jump Around, right? Like, that's the only thing. Like, as far as the game goes, the atmosphere, the crowd itself, it's kind of base level, if you will. The next one, and see, I would actually switch six and five. Actually, I'm looking ahead of something. I would actually switch 7 and 5, to be honest. And we'll get to number 7 here in a second. Number 6, Florida with Ben Hill Griffin Stadium. But let me correct that. Steve Spurrier Field at Ben Hill Griffin Stadium. Now, one of the loudest environments in college football. When Florida is playing good, that is definitely a place that is you don't want to be stepping into as a visiting opponent. There's the, you know, the Gator Chomp. The only Gators get out alive as the team runs onto the field. You've got Mr. Two Bits. You've got, you know, I Won't Back Down heading into the fourth quarter by Tom Petty. I mean, there's a lot of ceremony and a lot of traditions there at University of Florida games. But also at the same time, like I said, kind of the knock against Lane Stadium. Once the game gets going, that is a loud and hostile environment. So definitely, Florida, I think, is in a good spot right there at 6. Maybe could put them at 5 over Virginia Tech, but I would actually put the number 7 team at number 5 and then drop Virginia Tech down a little bit. Tennessee, Neyland Stadium. Again, another one of these college football meccas that is over 100,000, and it is rowdy, again, kind of like with Florida. Lots of tradition in place, lots of ceremony to the games, you know, running through the tee, Rocky Top, all that good stuff. But man, when Tennessee's playing good football, that there's, you know, it's right up there with Bryant-Denny. It's right up there with Tiger Stadium as far as being loud and just a tough place to play. Bruce Feldman has it number 8 on his list, Autzen Stadium for Oregon. Despite the fact that this place only holds 54,000 people, it is incredible to see how loud that it can get. Number 5, he has Georgia with Sanford Stadium. Again, another one of those places that when the team is playing really well, it's definitely really tough to play. Kyle Field is just a massive look. They say everything is bigger in Texas, and that goes for not only high school football stadiums but college football stadiums as well. Kyle Field is just a massive, massive stadium. And the thing about Kyle Field is it has that same effect that the Swamp has, in the sense that everybody's on top of everybody, right? It is such a close, like when you go to a Texas A&M game or you go to a Florida game, that stadium, the seating in the stadium is so close, you're going to get to know the people around you because you have no choice but to get to know them because you are right up in their business, you know? You got knees in your back. Your knees are in somebody else's back. You got elbows in your rib cage. It's hot. It's sweaty. It's loud. You're watching your favorite college football team play. If you ask me, there's no better way to spend a Saturday, right? So Kyle Field definitely deserves to be on the top 10 of this list. The fact that they're at number 10, a little surprising. Again, another loud environment with over 100,000 fans. I would expect them to be a little bit higher. But the Big House, not on this list. That's a little bit of a shocker right there. Jordan Hare, not on the list as well. Jordan Hare's kind of one of those places. They've got the tradition with, you know, the eagle flying around at the beginning of the game, you know, War Eagle and all that good stuff. So you could make a case for Jordan Hare. You could make a case for several other stadiums. But I think it's just interesting how the return of NCAA Football 25, that game has sparked the conversation of what is the most hostile environment. Because that is something that is going to be a factor in the game. Is where is it going to be tough to play at? Because it is going to be that thing to where, it shakes the passing routes. It wiggles the lines, so it makes it hard to see. You know, it makes it hard to kind of predict where they're going to go and all that stuff. So you really got to be on your A game when you're on the road. And I am definitely looking forward to playing that game. I'm looking forward to watching some actual college football when that gets kicked off. We are at the end of June. It's hard to believe we're at the end of June, but we are at the end of June. And that means we are, we're 2 months, 2 months and a couple of days away from the start of the college football season. I think I saw somebody say we're eight or nine Saturdays away from the start of college football season. I'm excited. I'm starting to feel it. I hope you're starting to feel it too. Definitely going to be talking about college football here on ESPN Pensacola, whether it's through the glass half full or any other opportunity that we have to talk about it. So hope you tune in for it once the season gets here. Thank you so much for tuning in and hanging out over the last few minutes. Hope you have a great day. And this has been the Glass Half Full with me, Jordan Glass, and ESPN Pensacola Podcast.